If you haven't tried Super Beet Soft Chews, you are missing out. Super Beet Soft Chews are a delicious snack you can take on the go and support your heart health. Super Beets Chews combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beet Soft Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Better blood pressure means more energy, the way nature intended, without the jittery caffeine or stimulants. Now you can take just 2 delicious chews a day, anytime, anywhere, to get the blood pressure support you need and the energy you want. Do what I did and support your heart health with delicious Super Beets Chews. Get your Super Beets Chews today at danasbeets.com, and when you buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the third for free. That's danasbeets.com to get a free bag of Super Beets Soft Chews when you purchase 2. danasbeets.com.
That's understandable, but that's what you're negotiating about, right? So isn't it just a political play to not allow the at least 1 week extension while you're trying to maximize your leverage?
Well, then we always trying to maximize leverage. They're trying to maximize leverage. How long ago did we send them this law that we passed in the House? We had it for.
Well, dang. Go ahead and be honest a little bit more there, Clyburn. It's James Clyburn saying, well, yes, we're going to wait till it's most politically advantageous. That's how we're going to do it. Welcome to the show. Ooh, it's another day that ends in garbage. I mean, why? Sorry. DanaLash.com at DLash on the Twitters and official Dana Lash on Facebook. Channel 248 Pluto TV is where you can also find the simulcast. So, my goodness. Where to start? Because we got mail-in voting stuff to discuss. The latest with the Rona, and everyone's fighting with the school reopenings, etc. Oppression chic, which you are absolutely, emphatically not going to, you do not want to miss it. We're going to get into all of that and more. So, as we get moving on here, over the weekend, the nation had a big, giant discussion on TikTok. Which I don't, any app that asks me too many questions immediately when I download it, I don't like you. I don't like apps. I don't like people that ask a lot of questions and want to get to know me fast and be friends in a quicker amount of time than I am comfortable with, to say nothing of an app that tries to do it. Like when you download TikTok, it just asks you a lot of questions and it takes a lot of liberties with your information, right? It's like the friend who shows up and lets themselves into your house. And that's like, that's what TikTok does. I get it. Everybody wants to take videos of themselves because we are in a self-obsessed culture and they want to share stuff on TikTok. There are some funny videos that come, but everyone thinks they're funny. They're not. Like fewer than 1% of the videos on TikTok are actually funny. Everything else are people trying to be funny and it's awful. Quit it. You're murdering the soul of humor. Stop. So there's been a lot of discussion as to everything that, you know, the extent that which TikTok is the amount of information that they're taking from you, et cetera, et cetera. They're banned on military devices. Pompeo has warned about it. Other countries have warned about it. And I know Microsoft now is looking to buy this. And the president has said that he was going to ban it over the weekend. So everybody got mad. And so here's my hot take on it, right? I know that there are a lot of people genuinely shocked that Trump is banning an app that steals your data and essentially is a eyepiece for the Communist Party of China, and it's run by the same communist government that unleashed an unholy plague upon the world. And I know that the people who are the most upset about it are the people who cheered states banning church services and gatherings and businesses from reopening and mandated face coverings. Pick a blanking narrative. Trump is a tyrant. He banned the TikTok. But also, I love the government mandate on face masks and how people could be fined and go to jail for not wearing them. That's so free and totally not at all like tyranny. Same people. Same. Just everybody knows this, right? I mean, I have 2 headlines on new entities saying, well, you can't have gatherings of more than 3 people Because, see, the coronavirus, it gets confused if there's a small group of people and it won't infect you. None of this crap is based in science. It's a bunch of knee-jerk reaction from politicians who are scared as hell over re-election. No, that's it. The people who are mad about banning of TikTok were totally fine with the banning of church services and everything else. I wanted to point that out. And it is not a false equivalency. The only person who would say it's a false equivalency is someone who is stupid and has not even gone through the first 3 years of primary education. And you should be quiet because you're embarrassing humans. Shh. I get aggravated about this because it's the same damn thing. Now, I don't like governments going in and saying, I'm going to ban this app, I'm going to ban this app. That's great if you think that TikTok is just an app. I can argue both sides of this. I really actually don't know where I fall on it. I don't like communists. And by don't like, I mean hate with the burning passion of a frillion suns. I hate communists and communism so bad, my hatred could not be contained into a box because it would burn through. Any kind of a box, even Al Gore's lockbox, which is a joke only a certain percentage of our audience will understand. But I hate communism. I hate communists. And I also don't like being told what to do by anybody, right or left. I don't care. The moment someone tries to tell me what to do, I always consider as an immediate option not doing it. So I get a little when I have a government telling me what to do about an app. Although with this one, I hate communists and communism more than I think. Actually, no, pretty much about the equal. But I understand the whole point of it. It's not just an app. It's an app that's gleaning tons of information off of people. Tech publications have been warning about this forever. There's a couple of really good pieces that I read. And I've read stuff about Wired at Wired about this and TechCrunch and everything else. And I've been following all the discussion on TikTok. I don't know anybody that actually like really likes it. The Gen Zers in my house think it's kind of. Some of the Gen Z in my house, they think it's like for old people, like apparently you old millennials out there who are now officially, I guess, old people to some Gen Zers. Welcome. Now you know what the people who've been raising Gen Z feel like. Welcome. Welcome to the club. You're dorks now. Yeah. And so the questions of what they've been doing, how they said, oh, it's only, you know, the data that is collected, it only stays in America and Singapore. You're gonna trust the government that unleashed a plague on the earth for that, right? But the Pentagon banned it. Joe Biden's campaign, by the way, they've banned it from any of their staffers' devices. None of the campaign staff are allowed to have TikTok on their phones. None of them. They said that it's not safe. And it's not just him, like apparently all the campaigns did, but now because, you know, he's the Democrat nominee. They said, get it off your work, even take it off your personal devices. Even if you don't even use a device for the campaign, remove it. They said there's too much of a security concern. The Biden campaign, they won't even put anything up on TikTok. None of their people have stuff up on TikTok. They said that you have to take serious precautions. The Democratic National Committee, same thing. Get it off your devices. Everybody's been saying that. So why are people crapping their pants because Trump's like, hey, guess what? This app is shady. Everybody already knows it is. Suddenly it's not anymore because he acknowledges the obvious. Hey, guys, it's legit a communist trick to get your information. And then you have the people out there who are like, oh, I don't care if they have my information. I'm just, you know, so-and-so, whatever, in the middle of the country. Okay, that's great. But they're looking at American behavior overall, and they're looking at a lot more things than just that. And if you are naive enough to believe that, I have an amazing bridge to sell you. It's the Eads Bridge. It's in St. Louis. It's mine, officially. And you can have it for the cool price of $50 million. If you are so stupid as to believe what I just gave as an example, then you're welcome to invite to buy my bridge. Because it is. And then I'm not even going to get into the trafficking and other issues that are disgusting and come up with this app. Because that's awful. There's a lot of seriousness to be considered with this. And instead of actually exploring all of the different ways that communist China is looking we're going to get into the agriculture, the sending of the seeds. It's you have to look at all of these other related issues. It's not just Trump doesn't like TikTok because some chick. Oh, okay. Sidebar. There's some chick who I don't know, and I've seen one video, and she wasn't funny. I was expecting to be blown away by her funniness, her comedic timing. I don't even know who she is. Some broad. And everyone's like, oh, she does a really good Trump and she just blasts Trump. And I love good humor. I don't care if you're making fun of something I like or not. If you're funny, you're funny. And I was really, I mean, my hopes were up. My expectations were at an all-time high. And I clicked on a link to watch this chick's video and it sucked out loud. It sucked with an overwhelming force of a Dyson vacuum. It was so bad, I had to hold on to the screen to keep from being sucked inside of the cyber world in which the suckitude was taking place. And so I didn't even watch all of it. And then I went and I looked and apparently she was like bragging that or her surrogates were saying, yeah, Trump's banning it because of this girl. Guess who blocked me? I had never even heard of this girl until right, like literally yesterday. This chick had blocked me already preemptively on Twitter. Wow. But, you know, the president is the sensitive person. Girl, I didn't even talk to you. Like, don't even. Like, you're not all that. At least, you know, let me like tick you off before you block me. But like to block me preemptively, you are not all that. And it was just wasn't funny. All right, so John Lewis funeral attendees were exempt from quarantine. Meanwhile, my friend had to let her dad die alone in a hospital and watch through plexiglass. I'm not exaggerating. So one finger salute to everybody who's okay with this. Actually, both of my fingers. And I wish that I had more or I could do this with my feet because I would offer up two more. This is insane. This is why you lose reasonable people. And this is how you get reasonable people to reject any reasonable suggestions about containing the virus or treating it. It's a July 24th order. And it literally, because, you know, when you have people who come in to DC, they have to self-quarantine, especially if you're from Texas. You got to stay somewhere for 14 days before you can leave and do anything. Otherwise, you're in big doo-doo, right? But if you were coming in for John Lewis's funeral, no, you just got a green card. Go out. Don't even pass go. Just get, you know, get all the money out of the Monopoly money box and go to the funeral. Doesn't even matter. Just go. They didn't have to quarantine or anything. Yet everyone's going, everyone's sitting here going, oh, well, I wonder where the next hotspot will be. Don't talk about the funerals, though, where nobody was social distancing and some people weren't even wearing their masks over their nose. But don't talk about that. This is the kind of stuff that I see and that normal, regular, average, everyday, good, decent people cite when they're like, I feel like it's not based in science. This is not something based in science. Oh, we're going to give, see, the virus isn't going to affect these people because it knows it's a funeral and the virus has good manners and the virus isn't going to come and infect people at a funeral because that's a no-no. You know, just like you don't wear white to a wedding, a virus is not going to go and infect people at a funeral. Did you know that? I mean, it goes by the rules. It goes by societal rules. I mean, this is politeness. It's a polite virus, apparently. I guess that's what we're led to believe here. This is garbage. This is not based in science. None of this is. So coming up, I have more cancel culture. Somebody's a music theorist. People are calling for him for a music theorist. To be fired. What are you doing in music theory? What is this? We'll discuss that coming up. We'll also get into some of the 2020 stuff as well, because Biden was supposed to announce this week. Now they're saying he's not going to announce this week. Is that what I'm hearing? We'll have that for you. We're also going to get into a couple of really awesome stories rejecting cancel culture and rejecting narratives. They are awesome. You don't want to miss them. And we have Senator Marsha Blackburn, who's going to be joining us as well. If you haven't tried Super Beet Soft Chews, you are missing out. Super Beet Soft Chews are a delicious snack you can take on the go and support your heart health. Super Beets Chews combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beet Soft Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Better blood pressure means more energy, the way nature intended, without the jittery caffeine or stimulants. Now you can take just 2 delicious chews a day, anytime, anywhere, to get the blood pressure support you need and the energy you want. Do what I did and support your heart health with delicious Super Beets Chews. Get your Super Beets Chews today at danasbeets.com. And when you buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the 3rd for free. That's danasbeets.com to get a free bag of Super Beets Soft Chews when you purchase 2. danasbeets.com.
Follow Dana on Twitter at DLash and official Dana Lash on Facebook.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick 5, brought to you by Caltech.
This is the one thing that you never, ever want to be number one in, ever, and that's leading in homicide. Chicago sees 139% jump in murders, a huge increase in shootings just in July alone. Already they've beaten the number of homicides that they had last year, and we still have a few good months to go before this year finishes out. And a lot of the discussion comes from, well, you have police that really need support. Their recruitment's down. A lot of people aren't wanting to do it because, well, they see what happens in the headlines. Every single thing that anybody does, if they wear the blue uniform and the badge, everything is questioned. And everything one bad cop does is attributed to everybody. So, yeah, I don't know if that number is going to improve, sadly. So, great weekend because of SpaceX and NASA. Astronauts Doug Hurley and Bob Behnken emerged from the Dragon capsule after it splashed down in the Gulf of Mexico. So, two things. Number one, I knew it was hot when it came in, but I didn't realize it was like, I'm going to boil the waters hot when it hits the ocean. Dang. And then number two, apparently all the people in private boats that were out in the water made a beeline towards this thing, and the Coast Guard and others had to try to keep everybody back. I mean, I get it, everyone's excited, but also that capsule will fry you, and these people are trained at getting it out of the water. So stop, right? Just quit. But made history. This is like what the first time that we've had a re-entry and landing safely of a capsule in what, like 45 years? People come in. So this is awesome. The mission named Demo 2, this is the first time that NASA has launched astronauts from U.S. soil in 9 years. And so now this is a huge step forward. Super awesome. U.S. small business bailout money apparently flowed to Chinese-owned companies in a story out from the New York Times. They're saying that millions of taxpayer dollars went to China from the Paycheck Protection Program. They, according to publicly available loan data, there were a couple of strategy consulting firms that looked at, you know, several, a little over $100 million that went to 125 companies that Chinese entities owned or invested in. And a lot of the loans were really sizable. At least 32 Chinese companies received loans worth more than $1 million. And the total, when all was said and done, and there's a little bit of an estimate in there, but it's upwards of $170 million. This is crazy. So there's some investigation into that. And I think that there's a lot of discussion that to be had outside of the headline segment. But however, that's concerning, very concerning. Now people are worried about the objectification of sex robots. An actual story up at Forbes. They said that now that I swear we're going to have like a robot rights thing happening. They're worried that people are objectifying sex robots, which seems to be like the entire purpose that they were created. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Stick with us. We got a lot more in store.
Delivering the truth online and on air. Listen to the Dana Show live on the radio or at danaradio.com or on demand.
I have been very opposed to TikTok. I was one of the first to expose the Chinese links. And I have urged that TikTok be closed down in America. There's a new proposal. Mnuchin and Meadows brought it up yesterday to have Microsoft take it over. There are some questions that have to be answered. How will the data be stored and secured? Will the Chinese have links into TikTok? So before I would be for such a merger, I'd have to get some answers to these questions.
So that's Senator Schumer, who's discussing the issue of TikTok and then, of course, with Microsoft. And welcome back to the show, DanaLash.com. Don't think that, I don't know, I don't have that app, I don't need to be worried about it, or that's something that just Gen Z does. Honestly, I thought it would be like younger millennials and Gen Z that did it. But every Gen Z I know, like all my kids and all their friends and their younger Gen Z, they all think that it is, and I'm so sorry for some of you millennials out there, but I said welcome to the club. You're dorks now, because anybody who's over apparently 20 is considered a fogey by Gen Z. They think that you're old and that this is an old person's app. I don't know who, because my youngest is like, nobody uses this. I go, apparently some people do, because a lot of the people that are using it are younger. So I don't know. But here's the thing. If this was just an app that was by an American, that was owned by an American business and doing whatever regular business stuff, that's one thing. But it is an app that is owned, you could just say essentially by China. We could get into the nuance, and I'm ready to. We could get into the nuance of, well, it's a business that, you know, that operates, and they're just based in Beijing. Here's a newsflash. And I discovered this when I was researching everything that I could about Phoenix TV. Sidebar to this, which is relevant to this conversation, Phoenix TV was the news entity that became really well known after one of their reporters asked the president a question. And it was basically, if Xi Jinping could have written a question and asked Trump this question, that's what it would have been. It was basic. It was a question that was in the realm of, why does the United States suck so hard and China so awesome? That's basically what it was. And everyone, even leftists, were going, who the hell is this? Like, who's this chick? And then come to find out they're from Phoenix TV, which kept trying to say that they were in Hong Kong. They had an office in Hong Kong, but it's actually, this is a business that was allowed to remain open because they are in so good with Xi Jinping and the owner is a Communist Party member. So this is what you need to know. If it is a business based in China and they are successful, the reason they are allowed to remain open and be successful is because they're a Communist Party hardliner. That is indisputable. And I went, I mean, you could look at Phoenix TV, you could look at the company that owns, the folks who own TikTok, all of this. You can't just exist in China because communism, you can't just exist in China and engage in commerce and make a lot of money unless you are a huge Communist Party hardliner. And then you even have the factions between like the Shanghai crowd and Xi Jinping, which is some of what that's what Xi Jinping's new aggressive strategy is being attributed to, trying to out-commie these Shanghai people. It's a big old long story that gets away from our main topic, but you get my drift. It's the idea that it could be its own thing and not be at all beholden to communist principles or ideas is crazy. And in fact, the Phoenix TV thing, the guy was actually a member of the party and a member of their military for a while. And there's some questions similarly around the entity that owns TikTok. So no, I don't trust a single damn thing. Yes, they collect your data. Do you trust? I don't trust anybody to have my data. Do you?
Not me.
I mean, yes, they have a lot. I mean, if you use Google.
Location data, and you have
Gmail and all of that.
Facial recognition.
Yeah.
I'm not interested.
I mean, if you're cool with having the facial recognition stuff and the ability to duplicate your voice, and you think that that's never going to come back to hurt you ever because our system is so foolproof and our criminal justice system is so amazing, innocent people never get put away and no one's ever wrongly convicted, then you go ahead and you have your belief. And if you really want to err on the side of, I'm just going to go ahead and trust the commies on this. I mean, you know, aside from the plague and all the other millions of people that ideology has killed, there's no way that they're going to continue these wrongdoings now. I mean, if you want to go ahead and be naive like that, do it somewhere else. It's not by me and the rest of us. Thanks. So that's bottom line on that. So the whole issue with TikTok, and if Microsoft runs it, that's totally apropos because, can I have a sidebar to this? This is totally not in my topic of conversation. Is it just me or is it older millennials and Gen X think that Microsoft is kind of, you know, clunky and dorky and right? What is this new fascination with Microsoft from Gen Z?
Bill Gates? Maybe?
I don't know.
Maybe Gates?
I don't know what it is. Like, they think that Apple, especially like my older son and my younger son, who actually codes his own games and all this stuff, he has an Apple product, but he's even talked about, you know, personal computers and Microsoft and all this other stuff. And I don't get what the fascination is. It like a generational thing? Because they're wrong, just like they're wrong about the pleated front pants. But I just wondered if you have any ideas. I'm totally open to hearing you talk about them on social media. All right. I know I got to get into some other things here, too. I wanted to talk about two areas of cancel culture. First, Condé Nast. The entertainment chief was replaced because employees discovered sexist and racist tweets this dude wrote 10 years ago. So I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be good, right? First off, it's from Bon Appetit, which is the food magazine. That's what people, Bon Appetit, two types of people read Bon Appetit. Actual cooks and people who want to look like they cook when they have company over, but they don't. So they just put the magazine out to infer the talent of cooking, okay? Or know how about a kitchen. I'm not even lying to you. I had a friend who did this, and she would get meals and she actually would order them from restaurants and replate them. I'm not even kidding you. Such a liar. I was like, you're so going to hell. There's somebody's going to go to hell for this. And then would keep like issues of Bon Appetit out. Like, she actually understood what was being talked about in those pages in sidebar. So Bon Appetit, Adam Rappaport, he resigned. And then they went after the head of programming over some insensitive tweets. Condé Nast has had a long problem with this. So their entertainment chief, Oren Katzef, people found sexist posts that he shared from over 10 years ago. So there are three. Let me share with you these three posts, okay? First one was, My 2-year-old gets a present for pottying like a big girl. This is Oren Katza from Condé Nast tweets. Now she wants presents for all big girl things like nagging and being irrational. That is not stereotypical. I mean, it is not, women are not at all, you know what? It would be a good idea for all the women there to just get together in one giant rage mob and nag this guy out of his job. Irrationally. Right?
Would they be proving his point?
I'm just saying. Now, he had said, there's either a cat on my flight. I think all of these should be judged independently, by the way. He tweeted, there is either a cat on my flight meowing repeatedly a few rows behind me, or he says a really horny woman. Okay. It's like, that's kind of cliched and, you know, it's not even funny. That's like great grandpa humor and it's gross. Quit. And then you have this one. Now, Kane, I will leave this for you to judge.
What?
Because, look, I don't know people who say this stuff. I genuinely don't. All the people who say this crap end up being on the left. And then they have to do like the mea culpa and all of that. So this is what he tweeted. This was July 6, 2014. Is it? That's not 10 years ago.
No, that's only 6 years ago.
Oh, yeah. See, that's way more recent. He tweets, Millie went up to the Mexican waiter and asked him for paper to draw on. He thought she was asking for his papers. Comedy ensued.
Is it bad to laugh at that?
Is it funny?
Yeah, a little
That's
bit.
That's not even funny.
Kind of a little bit.
Is it?
You just wanted a piece of paper.
This maybe would have been funny, like back in the day when, actually, Blazing Saddles is still funny. This is not anywhere near Mel Brooks.
I don't know.
Kinda.
2014 was a different
That's
time.
Not even funny, though, in 2014. I'm not saying it's offensive. I'm saying, first off, I'm judging it by the humor.
Right.
Because
well,
I
yeah.
think that's
is it
the first
funniest thing ever? No.
That's it's lame and it's cliched and it's lazy. And this guy's supposed to be an entertainment. I'm not entertained. Yeah, I feel emotionally taxed now because this is so bad. Where can I send a bill? Because I feel offended from the lack of humor, first and foremost.
I hear you.
This is not even... Okay, so now to the level of offense. Should he have been fired for these tweets? I think it's stupid when people get fired over stupid stuff like this. If a company, if a private entity wants to do it, and I say that across the board, I have defended Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, folks. And everybody was like, why are you doing... Because consistency. But is he a racist? Probably not. I don't know him. Is he a sexist? Probably no more than I am. So, but is he stupid and not funny? Yes. To me, that's like the biggest thing is it's just not funny. And that makes it even cringier, right? So apparently, they said he, these are the tweets for which he was fired. And then they fired Adam Rappaport, that's the Bon Appetit editor dude, because he apparently wore brown face to a Halloween party in 2013. Okay, can we seriously have a convo about this?
2013.
That's 2013. How, okay, if this was like 1965, maybe you could buy into you didn't know, right? And I just highly doubt that it was done for the authenticity of a costume. You know what I'm saying? I have a friend who, this was her sister-in-law, and I am so not even going to say where they live, but one of her children was obsessed, played basketball and was obsessed with a certain NBA player. Had the jersey, everything, every product this NBA player had. And this is, he wasn't even 10 yet. Wanted to go as this player for Halloween, like authentically. And the mom was like, you seriously can't do that. And he was like, well, why can't I? Because then nobody's going to think that I'm him. It's just like, yeah, you're not. But it was interesting because he was like, well, it's not mean. I don't understand why. He couldn't understand why. I think there's a difference between like cultural exchanges and celebration and then also like obviously trying to denigrate a culture, which I don't know if that's what he was doing or not. But given the fact that he was the editor of Bon Appetit and he had a faux hawk, I'm going to go ahead and assume that it was going to be denigrate. I just assume the worst of anybody, a grown man with a faux hawk. They're great for toddlers and women, and that's about it. Right? So, all right. So that's the first one. The second one is the music theorist dude I was telling you about. Why are you even mad at a music theorist? This is in North Texas, University of North Texas. What? UNT. They, it's a music theorist whose name I can barely pronounce, Heinrich Schenker, and he is the, he has a thing called the Journal of Schenkerian Studies, and it's apparently a big music dork thing. Sorry, but you know, music theory. Excuse me. And there was in a recent issue of the Journal of Schenkerian Studies. Holy wow. There was a critique of an address given by another theorist, Philip Uel, to the Society for Music Theory. And he posited a, quote, white racial frame in music theory that is structural and institutionalized. So he accused Schenker of being a racist. Therefore, everything that Schenker has done in music theory is also racist. Because he says that there was a white racial frame in music theory. So music theory is racist. So the what he said, his abstract was for the music theory has tried to diversify with respect to race, but yet it's incredibly white, not only in terms of people who practice music theory, but also, okay, can I give you, okay, I'm just, you get where I'm going. I don't think it's racist. I think that some people don't care about it because it, I think that the people who play without soul try to inflame the academia aspect of theory. Is that a correct observation?
That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, because I've seen amazing musicians, black and white, who could teach these classes, but they play with soul, and they're busy playing with soul, and they actually have an audience. Yeah, and so they go out and they're famous musicians, or they work as musicians. They don't have to do this. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think that's the difference.
Right, they're pumping up the academia aspect of it in order to feel important in the genre of music in which they have zero talent.
When you hear, there was a friend of mine who went into music theory. Great musician. I mean, dude was fantastic. But it was, I was bored to death listening to them. I mean, they could do mechanically everything. Played guitar and even could play like Spanish guitar, could play banjo, anything. And they were really, really, really talented musician. But it was boring and everything was formulaic because it was so scientific and mathematical. There was no soul. There was no improvisation. There was no, really great on theory, could teach it, couldn't do it, right? That's like the people who can't do it teach. And I have the same feeling with this. And I have the, that's from my personal experience with people who have gone literally into music theory and people I know who are actual professional musicians. So I don't know. That's just, the fact that we're taking this social justice thing to even music theory, yeah. Will you stop it? Will you stop it? Stop. Quit. Don't do it anymore. Everything is sucking. Quit adding to the suck. It's really simple. I have more to come too. I'm not even like, we've got to get into a bunch of other stuff, including, really? Are y'all not going to say nothing about them Clinton coming up all those times in the Epstein docs? We really not going to talk about that? Because I feel like we should. We will. We're gonna touch on that. We got a lot of stuff to get into, so you don't want to miss a beat.
Head to DanaRadio.com for the latest videos, blog posts, and podcasts.
DanaLash.com, at DLash on Twitter, official DanaLash on Facebook, DanaLash on Parler. Go and find me. I wanted to make sure that I touched on this awesome piece that was shared by my friend Royer Borges. And if you are unfamiliar with the Borges family, their son Anthony was a survivor of Parkland, actually used his body to shield a classmate when that murderer busted through a classroom door. Murderer who could have been arrested before he legally purchased a firearm if only the sheriff's office had actually acted upon the reported threats against students' lives that were made digitally, which violates a Florida state statute, but I digress. And Anthony was livid because the Florida Sun Sentinel decided to, after they said that Scott Israel had to go, they decided that they were going to endorse him. And he wrote a very long and thoughtful piece where he blasted the Sun Sentinel. He said, I thought we would eventually get a sheriff that wouldn't let this happen. And I read that you guys are endorsing him for sheriff. I still don't understand why you guys, knowing what he did, would endorse him. When I read the newspaper, all I could see was the excuses you were making for him. He says, explain why you guys did this. It has hurt a lot of people and for what? That's Anthony Borges. I had the pleasure of meeting him and his dad. Sweetest family. We have a lot more to come, folks. Stay with us.
Oh.
Politico reported that in a closed meeting on Friday, you accused Dr. Deborah Birx of the coronavirus task force of spreading disinformation about the pandemic. Is that true? And do you have confidence in her?
I think the president is spreading disinformation about the virus, and she is his appointee. So I don't have confidence there. No.
Why are they fighting now? Why is Nancy Pelosi so against Dr. Birx? Because whenever Trump would disagree with Fauci, even though both of them resisted bait to go at each other, then it was made into a big deal. But why is this not? I mean, she was harsher towards Birx than anything that Trump's ever disagreed with Fauci. Welcome to the show. Welcome back. Second hour. I'm Dana Lash at D Lash on Twitter. Dana Lash on Parler, official Dana Lash on the Facebooks. So a lot of stuff to get into, including that fight. And she kept apparently kind of hitting at her. And Dr. Birx responded, audio soundbite 18, and I thought that this was a really good response. This was just over the weekend. Listen.
Before we go, the House Speaker on another network just said that she does not have confidence in either the president or you, Dr. Birx. Do you want to respond?
I have tremendous respect for the Speaker. And I have tremendous respect for her long dedication to the American people. And I think it was unfortunate that New York Times wrote this article without speaking to me. I could have brought forth the data. I provide data every single day with an analysis. The day that they're talking about, that I was, quote, Pollyannish, it said there was improvement in the New York metro. But ongoing cases in Boston, in Chicago, a new outbreak in Houston in full logarithmic spread, and new concerning outbreaks in Baltimore, New Haven, and Washington, D.C. This was not a Pollyannish view. I have never been called Pollyannish or non-scientific or non-data-driven. And I will stake my 40-year career on those fundamental principles of utilizing data to really implement better programs to save more lives.
That was great. New York Times did a whole piece on their fight. That was a great response from her. It was a really good response. But why do you think that? Why are they fighting? Why the fight? Why? Why would Pelosi? I am trying to understand the strategy of this.
Dr. Birx is a direct connection to Trump.
But she's even been at odds with Trump on certain things. So it's not as though, I mean, that's like a really tough sell to say that, you know, Birx is Trump's surrogate somehow. That's a really tough sell.
Well, it happens all the time in the media. They always want to link Trump somehow to no matter who is out there, no matter what is happening. It somehow has to link negatively to Trump.
Can you imagine if Trump had said something like this with regards to Fauci and then somebody had done and sources had spoke? I mean, it would have been, people would have been apoplectic. Just the weirdness in the treatment. I have to tell you about this story, although I know there's an update with the injury that this athlete sustained. Orlando Magic. Because one of the things that we've seen over and over is everybody taking a knee. All the stuff during the anthem. What is it in hockey? They didn't.
Yeah, hockey.
And everybody's mad over hockey. And then there was one dude who came out and he's Canadian and he took a knee for the U.S. anthem, but not for the Canadian anthem, as though apparently Canada has never had any issues with anything.
Right.
Okay, whatever. Well, I'm going to talk about this guy first, though. Well, actually, where's the? Let me pull this up because they did. Yeah, in who's the Canadian player that took a knee? He took a knee for Matt Dumba, which is a very interesting name. I read one report. Anyway, he was the first NHL player. Nope, whatever. And he says that he regrets not kneeling for the Canadian anthem. But he came out, he kneeled for the U.S. anthem, didn't for the Canadian anthem. And he told NBC, to be honest, I kind of froze up. I mean, I want to shed light on people who live through injustice and oppression. Okay, but everybody's story always changes. That's the thing. And my whole issue with the taking of the knee during the anthem was that I disagreed with the reason why people were taking a knee. As long as people are peaceful, I don't care, honestly, how they are expressing themselves. I don't think that whether or not you find it respectful is the litmus test for whether or not it is protected by free speech. I mean, that's the difference between me and, I guess, some others. I'm two steps above anarchy on some of this stuff. I am a purist when it comes to speech. Absolute purist. I just simply disagreed for the reason why they were doing it. And I disagree. And I now I think it's gone from the we're taking a knee because it's we believe in police brutality, where you can definitely criticize bad policing. But to say that it is the overwhelming problem is simply not supported by the data, which we've gone over, you know, tirelessly on this program. And then now it seems more like you're pledging you're bending a knee to Marxism. There's a Marxist movement that's wrapping itself in the veneer of equality, and it's fighting for anything but equality. And so that's the problem that I have at this point, because you're saying that you're pushing for one thing when really you're honestly doing it as an exercise for something entirely different. So anyway, this hockey player, he takes a knee for the U.S. anthem, doesn't for Canada's anthem, because Canada's never had a problem with anything ever. And then you had Jonathan Isaac, Orlando Magic. He's their forward. And he stood for the anthem. He stood for it. And everybody came out there. Everybody else was wearing, they were wearing Black Lives Matter shirts. And they took a knee. And he neither wore the shirt nor took a knee. And he stood by himself for the anthem. And he may have been the only person in that arena doing it. And audio soundbite 17, when he was asked about it at the post-game conference, this is what he had to say.
Absolutely. I believe that Black Lives Matter. A lot went into my decision, and part of it is, first off, is my thought that, you know, kneeling or wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt don't go hand in hand with supporting Black Lives. And so I felt like, just me personally, and what it is that I believe in, standing on a stance that I do believe that Black Lives Matter, but I just felt like it was the decision that I had to make, and I didn't feel like putting a shirt on and kneeling went hand in hand with supporting Black Lives, or that it made me support Black Lives or not. I believe that for myself, my life has been supported through the gospel, Jesus Christ, and that everyone is made in the image of God, and that we all fall short of God's glory, and that each and every one of us, each and every day, do things that we shouldn't do. We say things that we shouldn't say. We hate and we dislike people that we shouldn't hate and dislike. And sometimes it gets into a point where we point fingers about whose evil is worse. Mm. And sometimes that comes down to simply whose evil is most visible. Mm. So I felt like I wanted to just take a stand on it. I feel like we all make mistakes, but I think the gospel of Jesus Christ is that there's grace for us, and that Jesus came and died for our sins, and that if we all will come to an understanding of that and understand that God wants to have a relationship with us, that we can get past skin color, we can get past all the things in our world that are messed up, jacked up. I think when you look around, racism isn't the only thing that plagues our society, that plagues our nation, that plagues our world. And I feel like, you know, coming together on that message that we want to get past not only racism, but everything that plagues us as a society. I feel like the answer to it is the gospel.
That is amazing. Jonathan Isaac is an awesome, awesome man. And he's 1,000% right here. And he really did. He refocused all of it. I mean, and especially people of faith. And I see a lot of people of faith that, you know, they go out there and they say that this is, you know, they're doing this for, you know, whatever reason. I've seen people, you know, do the stunt of washing other people's, you know, making the other person feel awkward, even washing their feet and all this stuff. It's like, no, first off, you need to refocus the whole thing. Every pastor out there needs to be listening to what Jonathan Isaac just said. Every single one of you pastors out there needs to be listening to what he said. And I'm going to tell you, as somebody who, like I said, my biggest fallback is my mouth. I have a sassy mouth, and, you know, I fully recognize this. But when you have churches shut down right now because we're going through a pandemic, the last thing that I want to see pastors do is buy into this divisive optic, a Marxist optic, that there is, and act like, I mean, I've had pastors, I've sat in a church one time, and it honestly, I'm going to be real with you. I listened to a pastor sit here and tell me one time about white privilege, and it made me never want to go back to church. Be real. Pastors, you need to be listening to how he is talking about this. You know, when you're talking about a country that spent over almost 700,000 lives to free people. And then I'm going to be lectured. You know, I'm going to be lectured by some white dude when, you know, as a woman, I wouldn't have been able to vote for the things that these leftist racists wanted. And as a person whose ancestors were on the trail of genocide, sorry, they couldn't do anything. They were being marched to their flipping deaths. And unlike Elizabeth Warren's, I've got some roll numbers. You know, to sit here and have people say that in the Lord's house. I looked at my husband and I said, I'm going to have some trouble. If this is what we're going to be taught, you're going to kill church. You pastors out there, if this is the stuff that you're promoting, you're buying in to a Marxist scheme and you are going to finish what the devil started, which is killing the church. I don't want to be around when there's a reckoning with you. Jonathan Isaac could teach a lesson to every man who is leading a church out there. I shouldn't have to tell people this. I hear some of the critics. You're right. There should be some men of faith who are manning up and doing it without a woman having to say it. You're right. I love what he said here because he said the identity that matters is the true equality of everyone is equal brothers and sisters of the kingdom. If you think for one second that God does not have strong words in the Bible about people who want to act like someone is more redeemable than someone else because of their skin color, you do not know your scripture. And you might want to spend time in it before you preach for it. There are few things. There's a lot that, I mean, obviously you have your rules, but in terms of taking over, taking from God judgment because you think that someone is more redeemable than someone else because of something they don't control. Well, I wrote my book, Race Canceled. It's a sin. It's sinful. The end. It's also sinful to accuse good people who do not have hate in their heart of having hate in their heart and thinking stuff like that. That's also sinful. But apparently that sin's accepted if it can be used as a political tactic. Now, what Jonathan Isaac did here is one of the most powerful things that I have seen. It was more powerful than many of the protests I've ever seen. It was more powerful than any speech that I've seen. It was the simple, silent stand of someone who wanted to stand for their faith and kneel at the cross. Someone who wanted to show an example of true equality in the kingdom, which is the equality that matters above all else, and that's the equality that measures all equality. It was one of the most powerful things that I've seen in this entire discussion. I mean, I think he's brave for doing it. And I pray that the haters don't, you know, criticize him down. This is the lesson. This is the absolute lesson. And thank you, because it's awesome as a mom of boys for the young men in my house to see a young man do something so courageous and so strong and so public and so unapologetically. So thank you for that, Jonathan Isaac.
This segment of the Dana Show podcast is brought to you by Kel-Tec. They don't make ordinary firearms. They invent better ones. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Visit them at keltecweapons.com.
Grab the digital archives and enjoy The Dana Show on the go through iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
Ooh, so KFC, the Trinidad and Tobago one, but it's on the official KFC thing. Their Instagram and Twitter, they got into a lot of trouble because they literally had a fried chicken wing. And the shadow of the fried chicken wing was the resistance fist. And it said Happy Emancipation Day. And they literally put that out on their social media accounts, for which then they had to turn around and immediately apologize for putting something that insane up on their social media accounts. It's almost like the KKK Grand Unicorn or whatever the hell it is, like, came up with it. I actually am speechless, and I work in talk radio. That's crazy. Woo. Baylor cardiologists support hydroxychloroquine, the emergency use authorization by FDA. Two Baylor cardiologists sent a letter to the FDA supporting a request for emergency use authorization of hydroxychloroquine. They discussed the success in treating the symptoms of the virus. These are more actual cardiologists. There are other cardiologists that have been sending letters to the FDA supporting that use. Texas downgrades the coronavirus death toll after hundreds were incorrectly attributed, hundreds of fatalities, to coronavirus. So the Texas Department of State Health Services acknowledged that an automated error mistakenly attributed hundreds of deaths to the China-originated novel coronavirus that were not actually at all linked to the virus. So they said that 225 fatalities were removed from the list because they weren't actually coronavirus fatalities. Speaking of communist China, Senator Marsha Blackburn, who's been incredibly outspoken on the entity, joins us next. What makes Patriot Mobile different? It's their exceptional customer satisfaction. It's because they listen to your needs and share the same values. As America's only Christian conservative wireless service provider, Patriot Mobile is committed to supporting organizations fighting for religious freedom, First and Second Amendments, sanctity of life, and the needs of veterans and first responders by donating a portion of every dollar to the causes you believe in. And now, with the broadcast coverage of any provider on dependable nationwide 4G LTE networks, all Patriot Mobile plans include unlimited talk and data with high-value commitment-free plans to fit any budget. Call the U.S.-based team at 972-PATRIOT or visit patriotmobile.com/Dana. Use promo code Dana for free activation, multi-line discounts, veteran and first responder discounts, and up to $600 in referral bonus dollars. Make the switch today to Patriot Mobile. Call 972-PATRIOT or visit patriotmobile.com/Dana. That's 972-PATRIOT or patriotmobile.com/Dana. Patriot Mobile, mobilizing conservatives.
Missed anything from the show? Subscribe to Dana's Daily Podcast by subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are available.
Well, here's what I hope that the American people will come to recognize. These Chinese software companies doing business in the United States, whether it's TikTok or WeChat, there are countless more, as Peter Navarro said, are feeding data directly to the Chinese Communist Party, their national security apparatus. Could be their facial recognition pattern. It could be information about their residence, their phone numbers, their friends, who they're connected to. Those are the issues that President Trump's made clear we're going to take care of. These are true national security issues. They're true privacy issues for the American people. And for a long time, the United States just said, well, goodness, if we're having fun with it, or if a company can make money off of it, we're going to permit that to happen. President Trump has said enough, and we're going to fix it. And so he will take action in the coming days with respect to a broad array of national security risks that are presented by software connected to the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah, that is Mike Pompeo discussing the security concerns that so many had as it relates to TikTok. Welcome back to the show, DanaLash.com. And what we've talked about for quite some time, I mean, this is not just like an American company that created, you know, a fun app here in the United States. It's a company that is tightly wound with the Communist Party of China. And if you think that your data, it's not a big deal for your data to be taken, then I guess you think if you feel that way, and you can totally trust the government, totally trust Communist China, which just unleashed a pandemic on the world, and you think that justice is always served and criminal justice system is totally okay and no one is ever framed for anything, if you put your faith in government for all of these things, then you probably have no problem with an entity from a country that whose party hates the United States to have this information and to be able to watch American behavior, et cetera. That's just like one of the problems amongst many. Even the Biden campaign banned this on any of their campaign staff's devices, even personal devices that they have at home that have nothing to do with their work with the campaign. Joining us on this and so many other issues is a voice that's been very loud and on the forefront of everything as it relates with the increased aggression from Communist China, Senator Marsha Blackburn, who joins us via Skype. Senator, always so good to see you. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the attention that you were putting on this issue. We really appreciate it, because this is an issue that is not going to go away. And Dana, I started working on the issues around China back in the mid-90s. I was head of the Tennessee Film Entertainment Music Commission. We were going from analog to digital transmission and production, and all of a sudden, what did we have? Piracy. knockoffs, infringement of all this entertainment product that was coming out of the TV and the music community there in Nashville. And then we started to see it in books. Then you started to see handbags and scarves and things that were knocked off from fashion designers sold on American streets. All of this was made in China.
Yes.
And then brought back into the country. Then it moved into reverse engineering, pirating software, anything that America creates and makes, innovates, China tries to create a China version of that. So coming to Congress, I started the Songwriters Caucus to teach about intellectual property protections and to help my colleagues to understand why this is so vitally important. Now we get to the point where China is trying to overtake things like the NBA and the issues we've had there. We see them trying to come in and weasel their way into American corporations by saying, we're going to snuggle up and partner up with you. And when you're in business with a Chinese company, bear in mind the Chinese government owns about half of that company. And the Chinese government is the Chinese Communist Party.
Yes.
So this is the big flashing sign that says, beware. Do you really want to be in partnership with the Chinese Communist Party? Because guess what? You are not going to win that fight.
Absolutely. Not just the NBA. Of course, they were trying to, what is it? There was the story of the hacking and the attempted theft of the vaccine that the United States was developing.
That's
so after
right.
unleashing the pandemic, then they wanted to come and steal the vaccine and information related to that.
They tried it and see, they thought they could get by with it because what they've done through these Confucius Institutes that were in dozens of our American universities and Confucius classrooms that are in 500 K-12 schools. They've been passing out the cash using these things to bring their professors who are really spies into the U.S., into our institutions of higher learning, into research labs. They've been stealing our intellectual property, transporting it back to China, and they're doing it as a visiting professor who is here with the Confucius Institute and who is partnered with this institution, this university. So they thought they could get by with it. Thank goodness we have good people at our intel agencies and Secretary Pompeo, who is there at the Department of State, President Trump, who has said, I'm going to be tough on China. It was a promise he made. It is a promise he has kept. And they don't like it one bit.
No, and they are not fans of you either, because you've been very vocal about these issues.
No, I've been sanctioned by the Chinese Communist Party. I've been banned. You know, can't go to China.
Oh, well. She seems so heartbroken, Senator Blackburn seems so heartbroken over this. I wanted to have you also clarify to everybody out there, because in our discussions with folks, one of the things that I hear raised as a defense, and not even by people with the intention of defending the Communist Party, but this idea that you can be an independent business based in China, which is non-existent. Talk to us about that, because you're wrapped up, that the business for it to be, even be allowed to exist has to be wrapped up with the Communist Party.
That is correct. As I just said, in China, the MOFCOM is their version of the Department of Commerce. And MOFCOM basically determines who is going to be in business, how they're going to be in business, and who globally they're going to partner with. Now, there are some sectors of the economy where China has slowly sucked us in. Look at pharmaceuticals. If you want vaccines, most of them are made in China. If you want antibiotics, now China has been so successful in cornering that market that most of it is made in China. And this is why I've been trying to bring that pharmaceutical manufacturing back to the United States. And Dana, actually, the legislation I filed to do that, I filed pre-COVID, Wow. And before we got into all of this with COVID, now it's really important that we pass that and bring it back. But here's the thing. When, as we have had COVID happen, what people have done is to look at areas where we have been dependent on China. What we found out the end of February, we needed to have a vaccine, starting the work on the vaccine. There was an active pharmaceutical ingredient that we needed. And the only place on the face of the earth you could get it was China. And China said, well, we may not let you have that. So people started saying, hey, wait a minute. These critical supply lines, whether it's in pharmaceuticals or semiconductor chips or rare earth minerals or some of our military components or iron ore or telecommunications, maybe we need to bring this back. Hmm. And absolutely we do. That's what I've been talking about now for several years, and it is why we need to make America manufacture again. I told President Trump one day, I said, let's put all these bills together and let's call it the Mama Agenda. Make America manufacture again.
I like that.
Because that's exactly what we need to do.
Yes, absolutely. And because I've talked to so many people who say, you know what, even if it's made, even if it's more expensive, if it's made in the United States, there's not an exception. Hundreds of people that I've talked to, and then not even the thousands on social media who get in and say, I'll pay more if it's made in the United States, because I look at that as an investment against, you know, my dollars going to the Communist Party of China, which ultimately that's how you have to view it. What progress has been made on this? Because I know we're not the only country that's thinking of this. Japan, very reserved Japan, their prime minister blasted the Communist Party of China and then began trying to incentivize removing all manufacturing, Japanese manufacturing from China to relocate it back to Japan. What are some of the progress that we've seen thus far here in the United States?
Well, Japan has been a great partner with us on this. And the successful trade agreement that we, Ambassador Hagerty, before he left Japan, had negotiated a very successful agreement. And Japan has totally been our ally. I think that that's one of the reasons you saw Boris Johnson in Great Britain stand up to Huawei.
Yes.
You have other... When you look at what we have done domestically, and what you're saying, Dana, is exactly right. We have the opportunity to role model to other countries how to do this. And for us, saying we are not going to allow Huawei into any of our 5G systems, for us to say we are not going to allow our U.S. military to use TikTok, we are not going to allow our allies to run over Huawei systems. Mm. They cannot have TikTok on their devices. And just beginning to say, we know this is a problem. Returning to the U.S., the manufacturing of ventilators, incentivizing that. Peter Navarro is working on a program to bring the pharmaceutical manufacturing back and incentivizing that. President Trump's executive order today saying every federal agency, you cannot outsource to H-1B visas technology work that could be going to American citizens. Those are all steps that we are taking that is going to send the right message. Now, some of my colleagues have joined me in saying China owns... they're holding over $1 trillion of our debt. And I have talked with Secretary Mnuchin. I think we need to negotiate that debt down when that payment comes due. We need to require these colleges and universities that are taking federal dollars to disband these Confucius Institutes, get these professors who are actually spies out of the country and out of our research labs. We need to be strong in standing against the United Nations with trying to put China on the Human Rights Council. Yes. Look what they do to the Uyghurs. Look what they're doing right now to the Hong Kong freedom fighters.
Yes.
China has no place having a seat on the Human Rights Council at the UN. I have legislation that would ban birthright tourism. This is something that needs to happen.
Yes.
Because what are the two countries that are most prolific in their use of birthright tourism? China and Russia. And it is thousands of babies a year that are born to mothers who come into the country, they have the child, and then they exit the country after they have all the paperwork for the child. Mm. So this is something that we need to be smart about. We need to be mindful. We need to approach it not as a political or a partisan debate. We need to approach this as we are Americans. We are going to protect our nation's constitution, our nation's sovereignty, and we are going to make these hard choices because future generations depend on us having respect for the Constitution and our nation's sovereignty.
Amen to that. And we are so grateful, Senator Blackburn, that you're out there on the forefront of this, just leading the charge and calling attention to where it is needed. So appreciate these updates as well and with all your work on this. Unfortunately, our time is short right now, but Senator Blackburn, I know we'll be speaking with you again, and you'll be relaying to us developments as this continues. A lot of good things to be happy about with that. Senator Marsha Blackburn, the beautiful state of Tennessee, always such a pleasure. Thank you.
Good to see you. Thank you so much.
Of course.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. That's it. Very good news indeed on all that front. There's a lot to be concerned with, and I'm happy now that we're finally taking some action on it. We've got a lot more in store, folks, that you don't want to miss.
Head to DanaRadio.com for the latest videos, blog posts, and podcasts.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Our friend out in Florida, David Welch, sent us this story. This, just make a note, if y'all have any friends like this, you never ever want to go anywhere that involving water with this guy. Justin Stoller, he's been bitten by an alligator and apparently a poisonous spider, and just the other day, an 8-foot shark while on vacation. These all happened on separate vacations. No one go with this guy anywhere. They were fishing, and he legit got bit by a shark. And he was mad because he couldn't go back in the water the next day. This is in Florida. And then apparently, vacation before that, he got bit by an alligator. And he was showing the reporter with USA Today the scars on his leg. And then the vacation before that, he apparently got bit by a spider. What in the world? So this actually happened. He was at the Florida Keys Memorial Hospital. He got stitched up. He's okay. He said he's not mad at the shark. I would never go anywhere with this guy. Moving on here. This man, don't get on the hoods of people's cars. It's just that simple. I don't know why anybody would do that, but somebody chose to. The driver says he lost it. TMZ said a man clung to the hood of a big rig truck, and that he hopped onto the interstate waving for the truck to stop. The truck driver did. Then the truck driver says the guy latched onto the hood, began using a metal object to like scratch up and try to break his windshield. Hughes says he panicked and hit the gas, tried to shake the man off in a big rig, seriously. And finally the cops intervened, but it was crazy. There's video of them going on the highway. It's insane. Everything was under control. The guy in the hood was arrested and hopefully received mental help. Stay with us, folks.
Right now, we have a candidate for president within the Democratic Party who I just endorsed and brought along many of our constituents to get behind and support Joe Biden as the president, because I understand that we've now had an opportunity to move his platform to be more progressive, the most progressive platform a president has ever run on the Democratic side.
But I was told by reliable sources that that's not true, though. By who? By Schmo Wyden, some guy who is an expert, apparently, in things. Welcome back to the show, third hour. DanaLash.com, DanaLash on Parler, at DLash on TikTok. Twitter. We were talking about TikTok. I am not on there. Okay. Woo, I'm not on there. I don't like giving Communist Party of China my information. Official Dana Lash on Facebook. All kinds of good stuff.
So was Ilhan Omar saying that Biden's just really a puppet for the progressive left? Is that literally what she's saying?
Clearly not. I mean, that would be so obvious and correct, but that can't. Right?
I don't know.
I mean, okay, well, you know, well.
It's what I heard.
It's what you heard, and we all know that that is how it goes, right? Okay, so a couple of things here that I want to touch on. We have a lot. So some of the 2020 stuff, I see some of the narrative that is emerging. Give me a moment. I'm pulling all of this data up for you. So I have, this was over at Cook Political Report, right? And I look at Cook Political. I look at Real Clear Politics. There's a lot of places that I look at when I'm looking at polling. And I like to go, honestly, though, to like the big dailies and other smaller papers in the states to kind of look at their surveys. I just sort of like the state polling a little bit better. I think it's a little more reliable. At least it's one of the things I discovered when I was watching all of this in 2016 and comparing stuff on election night to stuff that states had reported. But here's one headline. It's over at Cook. Trump's grip on the GOP is slipping. This is a narrative I think that they want. You put your hand up. You were very, Kane objected. He's like, what? And then here's the other one. This is over at CNN. Biden is eating into Trump's Rust Belt base. This is, by the way, this could actually happen. I'm not saying it couldn't happen. It could. This is why I said last week that it's incredibly important for the president to stay focused on China and the economy and jobs and manufacturing. And it is so easy for him. It is so easy for him. Everything that Senator Blackburn talked about last hour, and if you want to go watch that interview, we'll have it up on Facebook and YouTube shortly. Everything that incentivizing the ability to bring back manufacturing to the United States and incentivizing domestic manufacturing production, that you check every box. He could just talk about that from now until the election. We're like 90 some odd days out now. That's really what he should stay focused on. We no more funny business. No more let's not tweet at 4 in the morning. Nope. This is when discipline calls. So I really hope that he stays on that, because one of the big reasons, and I remember, oh man, I remember 2016 when we were looking at all the breakdowns from Michigan, Pennsylvania, and some other states. And when, because Michigan was always the quote unquote blue wall, right? And when Trump broke through that, like the Kool-Aid man, that was a pretty shocking moment when you watch that happen as votes come in. We were all in there, and I'll never forget. So we were all up at Fox and doing the doing election night coverage, and there was half of the room were like Democrats, half of it were Republicans or Libertarians or Independents, conservatives. And as they were bringing stuff, because everybody began realizing that with Michigan and Pennsylvania, it was like 9 o'clock. It was relatively early. And this was East Coast time. And I just remember there were a couple of these progressive pundits that were just, and they'd get up from their seat, and it was pretty crowded. They'd walk around, they'd get on the phone. You could hear them talking to somebody and angrily texting, and the angry texting just got, it was pretty interesting to watch it happen. They were despondent by the end of the night. Bless them. But I think they're hoping that Biden can patch that blue wall. But, and he will, if Trump doesn't stay on message. It's not that Trump doesn't have a record of delivering on manufacturing and on job creation. It's that he can fall off the messaging of it. And then politics is only as good as what have you done for me lately? You have to remember that. That's why you have to keep repeating your immediate successes over and over again. And I hope that he does this and stays on that point so hard. I really hope. The polling, the Rust Belt, because remember, a lot of the people also in Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, they were not Democrats that became registered Republicans. They were Democrats that even in a lot of their state elections, a lot of their state candidates, they voted for Democrats over the Republican. But for president, they voted for Trump. That was the other weird thing. And looking at this, these were all the people who were saying the top three was jobs, immigration, especially in border states, jobs, immigration, manufacturing, and then tells it like it is. Tells it like it is was the one thing that was in the top three, no matter where you went in the country. And it didn't even matter how many Democrats there were to Republicans. It was still reliable in the top three. And so these were Democrats that were coming out and saying this stuff as well. And the Biden campaign, the Hillary campaign got in a lot of trouble because they were, it was all about identity politics and there was nothing on policy, whereas Biden's trying to not make that same mistake, but it's really difficult for him to do so because the far left keeps pushing him into that identity politic route, and they want him to say those things to have the momentum and the support of the base, but yet he realizes that he's going to further alienate the so-called blue wall there that Trump broke through. He can't make the same mistakes that Hillary Clinton did. And these individuals that are in this area, they're some of them are swinging Biden. They're swinging towards his direction, but it's not enough of a momentum so far that's been noted even by CNN that means it's like a done deal. But what it does mean is that Trump's influence there can be competitive, and Biden could give him a run for his money. It's so much of this is going to come down to messaging. And so I hope the Trump campaign really he outran his national margin, and this was from uselectionatlas.org. He outran his national margin by 2 to 3 points in the Rust Belt battlegrounds in 2016. And so the margin right now is smaller than it was in 2016. So there's he's got some work to do there. Got to get it done. Got to get her done. All right. Also, I want to get to a couple of other things here. The protesters were burning the Bible and American flags in Portland. I saw the video. That was like everywhere over the weekend. Did you guys see it? I always knew that Nazis burned books. They did. They burned books. What a great way to tell people that you're anti-fascist. We're going to go do something that fascists never did, which is burn books. Said no fascists ever. So they were burning Bibles and the flag and all kinds of stuff. And as the Wall of Moms and progressives fought with each other, apparently left-wing activists burned a stack of Bibles in front of the federal courthouse in Portland. For what purpose? What was the point? What does this have to do with, like, equality? Wasn't that the whole reason that... What does that have to do with equality? I'm at a loss. What? No one can actually answer that. Because it doesn't. This is where we're getting into... It's a stunt. That's all it is. And then there was this in Louisville. I'm pulling this up here. There was this story that came out of Louisville where... It's the local news there, WAVE Channel 3. Protesters are asking businesses to sign this list of demands, which sounds oddly familiar. These lists of demands are popping up in community after community. Y'all need to be watching what's happening in your schools, too, because demands are popping up in different school districts. There was a protester sent out a 3-page contract to the businesses in the area. And they were, this is where you had like 76 rioters arrested and they were charged with obstructing a highway, et cetera, and throwing bottles at police and damaging businesses, et cetera. So the people damaging businesses were sending a list of demands to the businesses. The contract demanded like a quarter representation of Black employees and business owners. And that they said that businesses are to donate a certain percentage of profits to local Black organizations if the businesses cannot make all their hiring and merchandise a quarter made up from Black-owned brands. And they want a 5% increase in Black representation every 6 months. And oh my gosh. So it's there. That's extortion. That's what we call extortion. And they gave them, according to WDRB, they gave them an August 17th deadline. And then the activists said if they didn't follow through and give them everything they wanted, they were going to go tank them on Yelp and other platforms and target them. That literally is extortion. So that's not how that works. They're telling these businesses how to run their businesses. And they're saying you have to have X amount, X percentage of your business be Black employees, and the wares in your business and everything you offer in your business has to be a quarter percentage from Black owned businesses. And how is that accomplished? What in the world? I'm curious. What if your business is like selling macrame plant holders? I'm going to go so far as to say I'm pretty sure it's a white hippie thing. Macrame, anything? What if that's your business and you got to go out there and find like a quarter? You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Local residents were obviously upset. And because they're going to get bad reviews if they don't meet any of these demands. They're going to get bad reviews. So that's how they do. Instead of bringing your concerns to the community and saying, can we talk about how to do this? They just say, here are our demands. You either comply or we're going to ruin you on social media. Which, by the way, I think we've seen in a number of court cases that that's actually actionable. And there have been people who have been successfully sued over this stuff. So you might want to be careful because some businesses can get real litigious about that. Just saying, we have more to come, including oppression chic. I have a story for you. You're going to want to hear it. It is pretty amazing. And it is the complete example. If you want to have a discussion on white privilege, I have an example for you. So we're going to talk about that here coming up. We also have today in stupidity on the way.
You won't miss any Dana shows by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever podcasts are available.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
I had this story and I lost it. There was a plane that was so stuffed with cocaine that it couldn't even take off. And where is this? I like shut the window down. I shut my window down. I'm so upset because I was all about this. No, this plane was apparently so full of cocaine during takeoff. I got it. The New York Post, $80 million of it, by the way. And it crashed en route to Australia because police said it was too laden with drugs to fly. That's not an Australian accent, but I can't do it. Five members of a Melbourne-based crime syndicate were arrested today. And they said it was dispatched. The plane came from Queensland to nearby. It was apparently going to go to Papua New Guinea to collect the drugs. And then I guess it collected the drugs and it was flying back. And it literally could not properly take off, according to the Australian Federal Police. They $80 million of cocaine. They arrested five dudes, ages 31, 31, 33, 33. Oh, and then the 61-year-old, and they all have ties to the mafia. And they fate like the Italian mafia, like the, you know? I don't know, that made it different. But gosh dang. And I like the police, Papua New Guinea's police chief, they were very like proper. They said, well, it was a transit point for illicit commodities. How proper is that? Look at them making that sound like so like upscale, you know, illicit commodities. And they were loaded with coke. That's what happened. They just crashed. Let's see. Post Malone. This is actually really cool. I used to not get him and now I don't care. I don't really. I am now. I dig it because I like smart people. He actually is from my area. Where I am now, anyway. And he goes to when he's in town, he likes to go to a bar that sometimes friends and I like to go to every now and then. Well, we can't anymore because of the pandemic, but whatever. Anyway, he was talking about the whole lockdown and the pandemic and having to wear a mask. And he said he opposes strict lockdown measures and he doesn't think the government should force people to wear stuff. He's like me in that I'm not opposed to wearing a mask. I'm opposed to being forced to wear a mask. Huge difference. And he says, quote, it's weird to me that it's like me in school having to blanking tuck in your shirt or you get detention. He says it's weird to be forced to wear something. And he said, you know, it just comes down to respect for other people. And he goes, he's like, it's not a government thing. Everybody has to live their life. Everybody has to be able to survive and pay their bills and eat, end quote. Okay, that's pretty cool. I dig it. You dig it? I think it's great. Jamaica Supreme Court rules that a school can ban a kid with dreadlocks. I was like immediately thinking Jamaica, New York, like there, like here in the United States. No. It's like Jamaica, the island where they ruled in favor of a school that said a 7-year-old cannot attend classes unless they cut their dreadlocks, which I don't agree with that. I think if you have to have your hair short, just pull them back or something, like if that's required. But I don't agree with making somebody cut their hair. Everybody's actually really shocked about that. I'm really shocked about that. They granted an injunction for the child to attend school after Jamaicans for Justice filed a motion on behalf of the child. But they said, no, the school requires it. So there you go. And especially for Rastafarianism, isn't that something like you don't cut your hair, right? I mean, right? You don't. I think. Yeah. Goodness. We have a lot more coming up, including a story on oppression chic. Don't miss it. Stick with us.
Head to DanaRadio.com for the latest videos, blog posts, and podcasts.
The police is the reason we're the country we are today because of law and order. But in today's world, they want to forget about law and order. And I said, that's what is sad to me. And so I think we need to realize that the way we can become a country is to come together. We're being divided right now. We're then being divided, and it's sad to me that my NFL team, a lot of my athletes in the NBA do not realize that right now we're being fooled to say that this country has its faults. It does. But we can accomplish those if we get together and we talk about solving these problems.
That's Herschel Walker speaking some truth. Honestly, like, it's like I'm back in my family's Baptist church. And I'm just like, I'm not, like, totally speaking out, but I'm doing some mms, you know. Welcome back to the show, DanaLash.com. He's totally right, by the way. I mean, I love the point that he was making. It's law and order. Everyone's equal in the law and under it when you break it. By the way, have you seen all these dudes who have been, because the NFL folks, they didn't take the knee, they stood for the anthem, and NHL, and there are all of these, who was it? Somebody was making a thread of all these dudes who, like these white dudes who were going out in the front yard and getting somebody to take a picture of them taking a knee. Look at you out there in your sliders on your front yard. You done solved all the racisms. I mean, it's like these total Kyles. They go out there and like, I'm going to take a knee in my yard, take a picture of me so I can put it on the internet. Look at me, not being racisms. Just, and that, and then they take themselves so seriously. I mean, it's, and I just have to say, they are getting so ratioed. All their posts that they put up on Twitter about it, they're just, I can't even read some of them. It's just... Man, the internet has a special justice sometimes. That's all I'm going to say. Speaking of the knee thing, I have to play this from Charles Barkley. This was great. He was getting heat over the weekend because he said this. I didn't think this was controversial. This is audio soundbite 22. This is what Charles Barkley said on the whole kneeling thing.
The thing is, listen, the national anthem means different things to different people. I'm glad these guys are all unified. But if people don't kneel, they're not a bad person. I want to make that perfectly clear. I'm glad they had unity, but if we have a guy who doesn't want to kneel because the anthem means something to him, he should not be vilified.
Yeah, there you go. Smart. I can't believe he was getting lit up over that. That's kind of crazy. But we live in a crazy time. I was telling you how a lot of these areas, they're seeing demands pop up. Like in the area that we live in, our district, there was like a group of progressive activists that are led by adults, and they submitted this list of demands to the school district that's going to alter the budget, right? Like the whole town voted on the school resource officer program, which was like $500,000. And I mean, rarely do you get over 90% consensus on stuff, but the town voted like overwhelmingly over 90% to implement an SRO program that was like a couple of years ago. And the demands from the activists are you have to defund that program and put the money towards groups that teach about racial equality, and you have to hire X amount of black employees. So they want to do away with meritless hiring. And immediately, like as a taxpayer, I'm all, okay, so what happens when the district gets sued for engaging in unconstitutional hiring practices? Because pretty sure it's the taxpayers that are going to be paying off that settlement, and we pay a lot in tax anyways, so I kind of have some concerns. But if you raise any of these questions, all the activists tell you that you're a racist for raising them. This is just your racism, which is, again, to accuse someone of such a moral failing is a sin. To accuse them of a sin falsely is a sin. It makes me sick. And I was talking to a friend of mine, and their student, because I don't want to give any information out because you know how people are, and I don't want any students to be targeted. Their student was having issues with one of the high school senior activists in the group, because it's really, this is one of those situations where you have progressive activists in a community that are adults that want to use kids as like the shield so they don't get criticism for their insane policies, proposals, right? and which is really unfair. And it's a horrible way to teach about advocacy. And it's also bad advocacy. And I was talking to this friend of mine whose student at the school was saying how, you know, this is all insane and that, you know, it doesn't speak for the whole student body, etc. But I was looking at some of the remarks that were on like certain public Facebook comment threads with all of this. And like one of the lead, I guess, activists in all of it was saying how oppressed they were. And how it's so oppressive and it's so racist and these proposals are needed to stop all of this stuff. And the individual was telling their story, you know, their grandmother's Puerto Rican, but they live in a very affluent subdivision, which is literally a gated neighborhood that has a legit staff security hut. Like where a guard's in it. Not even like the appearance of a fake one, you know what I mean? How some neighbor, no, it's like a real one. And they have like a security dude in there who comes out and like checks to make sure you can drive up into this area. And apparently it was like a neighborhood where the Jonas Brothers used to live. Yeah, it's like super fancy, man. And the individual had said, I was reading like some of, you know, the individual had said that they're one of their their grandmother was Puerto Rican or something like that, according to talking to my friend. And they were talking about how oppressed they were. And I'm like, you live in a gated neighborhood with a legit security dude. You have a flipping horse. And your first car was a Benz. I hardly think that you're oppressed. You know, like, just stop it. It's oppression chic. People... I think sometimes leftists want to, and not all, but far leftists, I think they definitely want to adopt this idea as a way to grab power that they're oppressed. And I'm like, I grew up poor as hell. You are not oppressed. If you've got a pony and your first car's a Mercedes, you're not oppressed. Shut up. You're not oppressed. That's like the opposite of oppression. I sent a screen cap of my convo with my friend to one of my friends who is a reporter, works in Washington, D.C. for a huge publication and is Puerto Rican. And I sent it, you know, full disclosure, I was like, I told my friend, I'm like, I didn't realize you were oppressed. And my friend's like, yeah, what? I've never been oppressed. And my friend took great issue with that. And then my friend's like, I'm Puerto Rican. I'm not a Uyghur. What? Talking about what China's doing to the imprisonment, the detainment, the torture, the murder of Uyghurs in China. But I just thought it was very interesting, my friend's response. Who's my friend's Gen X? My friend's response to this. But do you see this? Like, I see people who say that they're disadvantaged and all of this ignorant stuff has been happening. And I'm like, look, okay, if there is bigotry taking place, I love nothing more than wailing on people. So point them out to me, like wind me up and point me in that direction. Like I will go and have some fun. You know, I will go. My gym closed. I need something to I don't have any ropes to throw around anymore. I'll thrash some people Hulk style. Let's do it. And I'm just like, point it to me. I don't think any good person would sit by silently when they see ignorant stuff going down. In fact, I know they don't because everybody I know is vocal about anytime they see any kind of injustice. But to sit here and use a widespread accusation as a tactic. And then I was looking at some of these demands and I'm like, how in the hell does any of this go into solving any of these problems? And in fact, there's like only two problems that I saw, two instances. And I don't know. I don't know anybody who engages in that kind of behavior. And I can say this as someone who is proudly from Southern Missouri. I have not seen this. I have heard about it. Oh, I've seen it on television. I have not seen, maybe I just don't hang out with far left Klan type people. I don't know. But I have not seen this. And I'm just, you know, like I said, if there are instances like that, then name names, point them out. Public shame is a great thing. When you're doing something so morally detestable, public shame's great. But that's the thing that it's either, well, this happened one time or there were like two examples in that whole entire district of something taking place and only, and there wasn't any idea as to who did the second, And then the first, there were some kids who were singing along to a rap song on TikTok, that damn TikTok. They were singing along to a rap song that included the N-word, and they said the full word in the lyric. And they put it on TikTok. This is why I'm also like, stop letting your kids get all over social media. The hell's wrong with some of you parents? Quit letting your kids run rampant on social media. The internet never forgets. And if you want to tank your child's life, the quickest way to do it is to let them go unfettered on social media. It's irresponsible parenting. Yes, you should be publicly judged. I can't. My kids are not allowed on social media. And my oldest is still not. And he's now 19. I was young. He's not allowed on social media. I'm like, you, and when you pay taxes and you understand the full weight of words, that's the kind of ship I run. It's the way I look at it. And he also is not interested in all that stuff. I think he has like an Instagram account, and that's just, and he doesn't actually use it. It's just so he can comment on his friends' posts, and that's it. He doesn't do like the other stuff because he thinks it's silly. And he also thinks that a lot of the tech is for old people. I told you it's this generational thing. Like the young Gen Zers think that so much of the stuff is, I'm like, Instagram is not for old people. Stop it. All people of all ages can take pictures of their sandwiches and put it up on Instagram. Stop. So my favorite thing, sidebar, is to send memes that I know I'm positive that they've seen. And send it to them acting like I just discovered it. And then when they go, we've seen that like forever ago, then I always reply with, now you know how your dad and I feel every time you try to tell us how the internet works. Yeah, so I just, it's this like, it's the oppression chic thing. Have you seen this? Mm-hmm. I've seen it. It's like a new, it's like cool to be, stop it. It's like a poverty chic. Where you have people that go on vacation to like the poor, and they like take pictures of themselves pretending to help with stuff like in disadvantaged areas. Really? Stop it. That's just ridiculous. Either go help and don't, you know, be all Pharisee, take photos, saturate social media with it, or don't. I don't know. I have some pretty, yeah. Also, if you're an equestrian, which apparently is a very expensive thing, you're not oppressed. If you're putting pictures of yourself in your little equestrian outfit and you're riding a very, what I assume is a very expensive horse, it's not a pony. I'm going to get hate mail about it. I know jack crap about horses. I just know that they're like big dogs and I like them. But when you're doing all of that, you're not oppressed, and you can't go on social media and talk about all the ways that you're disadvantaged because your grandmother was Puerto Rican. Right? I mean, come on. I never had a horse. I didn't have any of that. My first car wasn't a Mercedes. I'll tell you that. Sidebar. You know what my first car was? It was a Buick Skyhawk, and it was gray. It was the color of gray primer, because I think it was. And all of us, there was at one point where there was a something with the circuit went out. And I just remember because one day my AC was not on, and I was driving to, because I did select, so I did sports all through summer, and I was driving to practice during the summer, and I had my windows open, and I was listening to Meet the Devil by Rolling Stones, and I had it up really loud, and it was on Keishi, had it up really loud, and every time I turned left, you know that part of the song where it goes, ooh, ooh, yeah. Ooh, there was an extra ooh in there, but it was really flat. And I remember thinking, I don't ever recall as I'm turning hearing that. That's interesting. No, what turns out is that something was blown in a circuit, and it also affected my horn. And every single time I turned left, I was honking at the world. And I didn't know because I had my radio up so loud. So therefore, at least 3 minutes, however long the song was, I was honking at everyone in Arnold, Missouri. And loudly and in a flat, sad ooh tone every time I turned left, which apparently was frequently because I had to get gas. So that's the story of my first car, my Buick Skyhawk. And then after that, I had a Geo Metro, which only went 60 miles per hour tops. It was like a Flintstone car without the bonus of being able to speed it up with your feet. And every time I got on the highway, it was a gamble with my life. It was like playing Frogger, and I had to seamlessly merge my little clown car into those cars. I look back and I'm like, how did I drive this car? Like, how am I alive today? Oh my gosh. All right. Whew, we could do a whole thing on that. We got more to come, folks. We've got Dana's stupidity on the way.
A higher caliber of talk. Get Dana on demand through iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Wilfred Brimley, and I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes about diabetes. Actually, about diabetes. Now, I'm not perfect, and I've done all things right. I shouldn't do.
So Wilfred Brimley passed away, who was amazing, 85 years old. I just expected he was going to live forever. Right. We say this. This is an homage to Wilfred Brimley. My kids did not know that he was like an actor, and he was in. Well, they never heard of Cocoon. I've never seen it, but that he was in all these other movies, and you know, he had a pretty huge career, even Cocoon aside. Kids, but then Rachel, our millennial, who for this entire time has been posing as a Gen Xer. It's like, I only thought he sold oatmeal. Well, right. She didn't say it like that, but she was like, I didn't know he was an actor. Right. And Kane and I fell out.
I know.
So, man. There
hasn't been a single human being that's raised more awareness for diabetes than Wilfred Brimley.
And he was just cool. He was cooler than McGruff the crime dog.
Right. And diabetes testing supplies.
That's right. I actually do know a lot about that, even though I do not have diabetes, but I know about it because of him. So he raised a lot of people's awareness, and now he's going to be a meme icon. That's why we had to play that, because my kids think that video is amazing. All right, really fast. I'm sorry, Kane, I robbed you. Today's stupidity.
Rep Clyburn admits they're just looking for political leverage when it comes to the new stimulus.
Well, but that's what you're negotiating about, right? So isn't it just a political play to not allow the at least 1 week extension while you're trying to maximize your leverage?
Wait, what? Yeah.
Well, then we always trying to maximize leverage.
Okay, there you go.
There it is.
There you go. Folks, tomorrow we're going to talk about how apparently pickup trucks are just designed to kill people. And also, why is no one talking about Bill Clinton on Pedo Island?